Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a big Monday edition. Are you feeling like it's going to be a big Monday, Dominic?
It already has been a big Monday, Crudy. Happy Monday to you, Evan, on the board, of course, our fair audience.
Well, we'll get there. We'll make it big and shiny and stellar. It'll be a stellar show. And to that end, we got John Nichols from The Nation, our good friend, joining us at the bottom of this hour at 4:30. So, John Nichols. And, of course, you can always be a part, 844-967-2789. Near as I can tell, Evan hardly screens them. So, you know, easy to get on, Dom. But while I've got lots of personal stuff I could share right now, a little small talk, I'd like to jump right into the headlines of the day. Dominic, do you know that our U.S. Senator from the great state of Wisconsin, Ron Johnson,
Rojo,
as he's come to be known, says he only participated in the election overthrow coup for a couple of seconds.
Now, that is what? That's a contradiction from his first, remember, I'm on the phone, I can't talk to you. No, it's, sir, you're not on the phone, I can see your phone, you're not on the phone. And at that point, I believe he was defending his, a couple of minutes. It was only involved for a couple of minutes. Now it's down to just a couple of seconds. Just a couple of seconds? I mean, how long does it take to do all sorts of terrible things? Can only take you a couple of seconds.
Pull that cannot be my child. I only had sex for a couple of seconds.
Exactly.
I cannot be a criminal. I only struck the match for a couple of seconds.
Exactly. And you go down the list. I only stabbed him a couple of times, right? I only pulled the trigger a couple of times. Hell, I only unlocked the door at the Lufthansa heist. I wasn't involved hardly at all. I was barely even there.
Well, let's clarify this point, Rojo, because it's not exactly exonerating the statement you've made. Let me read. During a recent interview, and we've got some of this sound. We'll play it for you in a minute. Between Rojo and WISN Television's Matt Smith, who asked Johnson if he would agree to speak to the January 6th committee. No, I had nothing to do with January 6th. Johnson said, if they asked you to testify, would you? Smith wondered. What would they ask me to testify about? Johnson said. The Republican elector, Smith noted, referring to the fake slate of electors that Johnson had asked to deliver to then Vice President Mike Pence in an effort to steal the election from Joe Biden. Again, another grotesque distortion, Rojo complained. I had nothing to do with the alternative slate. I have no idea anybody was going to ask me to deliver those. My involvement in that attempt to deliver spanned the course of a couple of seconds. Oh, can't be guilty if it's just a couple of seconds. Just a moment on the lips, a lifetime on the hips, Rojo. The senator said that he fielded 3 texts and sent 2. Well, that's more than a couple of seconds already. You know, just while the 3 little dots are going. Well, that part, just the waiting. Sometimes, Dom, the waiting's the hardest part.
Isn't it, though?
The senator said that he fielded 3 texts, sent 2, and talked to my chief of staff that somebody wanted to deliver something. I knew nothing about it, he added. Well, that's the same excuse when we asked him why he never investigated the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. Well, I knew nothing about it.
I know nothing.
Like Sergeant Schultz. Rojo went on to add, in the end, those electors were not delivered because we found out from the vice president's staff they didn't want them delivered. End of story. I know that been blown out of proportion. You think so? Smith remarked. Johnson insisted that it was wrong to look at the plot to overturn the election as a massive conspiracy. I had virtually no involvement.
Right, literally. Which means you had virtually some involvement. Even a couple of minutes, hell, even a couple of seconds. It doesn't matter the timing, man. I mean, if your hand is on the weapon, on the bloody knife, you are involved.
It only takes a second to create a smoking gun, Dom. Yeah. As Rojo is quoted here, I had virtually no involvement. Literally, my involvement lasted seconds. Okay, question mark? Like, okay, will you stop asking? Johnson initially denied having knowledge of the alternative electors. Didn't he, though? Didn't he? So anyways, Dom, let's play some of the sound for our fair audience. You don't hate to. Hate to rob them of the opportunity to hear Rojo sound now that we don't invite him on this fine show for interviews anymore. Here he is, Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, with Matt Smith. So here's a question. Rojo, why a third term? Because you promised the devil's advocates you were done at two. Play for the people. Cut one.
Because our nation's literally being torn apart. It was my very strong preference, my wife's very, very, very strong preference to serve out that second term, go home. But even I did not anticipate the disaster that the Biden administration would be and Democrat policies and Democrat governance would be.
Now, we've you want me on that
Obama
wall.
Obama said it, President Biden said it, they're going to fundamentally transform this country. I always ask, do you even like, much less love something you want to fundamentally transform?
But do you now think Democrats don't like?
No, they're leaders. No, I think most people love this country. How could they not?
Well, you know, caught in another faux pas, if you will. No, not Democrats. They're leaders.
Not the independents. Just they're leaders. They're leaders. And essentially what he's saying, it's so bad. I mean, there's a couple of ways to look at this. Number one, the country's being torn apart. Yes, a big part of that is the former guy spreading this big lie and him not allowing the peaceful transfer of power and the resulting January 6th insurrection, of which, Rojo, you were a part, be it a couple of minutes, be it a couple of seconds, you were part of that conspiracy, whether you like to admit it or not.
Well, let's not forget, Rojo was one of the ones that objected right away, right from the top. When he objecting to the slate of electors from Arizona, right? That was the plan. Him and Ted Cruz and a few others, they were going to object right from the top. And as they're objecting, people were storming the castle. And then a little bit later, Rojo lost his courage. But maybe he lost his courage later for the later objection, Dom, because we never knew before that someone was trying to feed the vice president a slate of false electors. And Rojo, at least for a couple of seconds, lost his freaking mind and was willing to participate in a coup against democracy. That's quite a confession, even for a couple of seconds, Rojo.
I only swallowed the drugs for a couple of seconds.
Only snorted the line for a couple of seconds?
He's a mule, man. He's a mule. That's exactly what he was.
You know, mules go to prison, too. Cut number two, more Rojo looking to define himself and Mandela Barnes.
In this race, it's a very clear choice. You can vote for somebody like myself who voted against all the massive deficit spending that sparked the 40-year high inflation, or you can vote for somebody who supports that, supports the tax increases in the last bill, supports low bail. That was a policy that, let's face it, that let out the Waukesha Christmas parade massacre murderer. Okay, so there's a
so
clear choice.
That's clearly Mandela Barnes' fault.
The policies that myself and Mandela Barnes support.
Okay, more from Rojo.
I mean, but he's very right on the tax issue, right? Because, I mean, it was Rojo that shepherded through that change in the tax laws that gave his donors $250 million in tax relief, right? So there's the contrast. And apparently Mandela's down with, you know, taxing corporations at least 15% when some of them pay 0 to 1 to 2% on billions of dollars in income. Yeah, I think there's a difference there.
Dominic, it was $215 million that the Uhlines and the widow Hendricks saved, but that was for one singular tax year. That number's been accumulating It's probably up closer to a billion by now, Dom.
Well, thank you for the clarity, Michael.
Yeah, I want to make sure we get it accurately.
Of course.
Here's the question of Rojo. Democrats paint you as a rich guy who wants to cut tax breaks for billionaires while you and your friends gamble with Social Security. Here's how Rojo responds. Cut three.
That's completely false characterization. It's a grotesque distortion. You know, of the two candidates, I'm the guy that did work shift work all the way through college and paid my way through college. Then when I started my business, we traded off, we say 12-hour shifts. It was more like 16-hour shifts as we got the operation running and hired supervisors. I started working at my first tax-paying job at the age of 15. I know I've been in manufacturing for 30 years. I know full well the struggles that Wisconsinites are having based on these Democrat policies. But one of the most grotesque distortions is the tax cut I got for 95% of American businesses. You know, all the Main Street businesses, all the little guys that have to compete against the C-Corps, that's what I accomplished. Even under, again, Republican tax reform, they were going to leave behind 95% of American businesses, except I said, no, I'm not going to vote this. I bucked my party. You know, I was very independent. I took all the guff from, in some cases, Wisconsin Talk Radio. Certainly I got the snarly phone calls from the Oval Office. They weren't happy with me. But I stood my ground, and as a result, those Main Street businesses also got a tax cut. More than 20 million tax filers took advantage of that. It wasn't a deal for me and a couple rich buddies. I mean, that's a grotesque and dishonest distortion. I got a tax cut for 95% of American businesses to allow them to compete with the big guys and survive the pandemic. I'm very proud of that achievement.
Thank you, Rojo. When you say 95% of Americans, you mean what? 95% of American small businesses, apparently. Because it's a smaller number, and I'm amongst them. I'm a designated S.
Ron came down, LLCs, S-Corps, right.
Ron came down and bragged all about that tax cut he gave us. Had to hold out for more than a few minutes.
Hell, so that accumulating maybe up to $1 billion that the Ulines got and the widow Hendricks that they received, all those other people added up. Do you think they got even close to that? I mean, if you save $10 and they got $10 million, do you think that's an equivalency?
Well, over the course of years, I'm sure I've saved at least a couple of thousand. Come back with us. 10 seconds to love. Rojo, if he lasted that long, that would be a minor miracle. More Devils on the other side.
They'll know what you did.
You know, I was not involved in this at all, you know. So I don't know why you're even asking the questions. So why don't you just leave me alone?
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines always open for our fair audience, 844-967-2789.
Dominic, want to go back to the Rojo interview? WISN, Matt Smith, the question asker. And I like the tone of the questions Matt's asking. So let's get back to him. Cut number four here, if we could. Matt Smith asks Rojo, is this race a referendum on your time in the Senate?
Yeah,
and
yes.
Shouldn't it be? Cut four.
No, I had nothing to do with January 6th.
If they asked you to testify, though, would you?
What would they ask me to testify about?
The Republican election.
I got the wrong one. So we're going to save that, and we're going to listen to the one you asked for.
There we go.
A referendum on Democrat policies and
the Biden administration?
I think so.
There's a lot of issues that could come between now and November outside of your control and the campaign's control. The January 6th committee is scheduling more hearings likely in September.
Let's jump to Rojo's speech. Speechify and pontificating on the January 6th, and they don't want me, right? Cut five.
No, I had nothing to do with January 6th.
If they asked you to testify, though, would you?
What would they ask me to testify about?
The Republican electors and the slate.
Again, another grotesque distortion. I had nothing to do with the alternate slate. I had no idea that anybody was going to ask me to deliver those. My involvement in that attempt to deliver spanned the course of a couple seconds. I think I fielded three texts and sent two and talk to my chief of staff that somebody wants you to deliver something.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about it. And in the end, those electors were not delivered because we found out from vice president's staff they didn't want them delivered. End of story. Again, I know that's been blown out of proportion.
You think so?
The January 6th committee didn't do due diligence. And they blew this into like some, you know, massive conspiracy. Again, I had like virtually no involvement. Literally, my involvement lasted seconds. Okay.
Sorry about the kids. You know, like the creation of the kids lasted virtually seconds.
But... Well, listen, of course, this is a referendum on his time in office. I mean, there's no question. He's been there 12 years. You said you weren't running again, and now you're still there, and you helped participate, you at least by your own volition, at least a couple of seconds in the coup and the conspiracy to overthrow the United States government. Damn right it is a referendum on your time in the Senate.
Well, Matt Smith asked a very logical follow-up question. Best interview of Rojo since like September of 2020 when he was last on this fine program. But he said, well, if the VP staff hadn't said don't deliver him, would you have? Let's see how Rojo answers that question. Cut number six.
President, in what way could have I? Again, you know, we did our due diligence. So if somebody handed us something, we're supposed to deliver to the vice president. Does he want it? Nope. Okay, end of story. That was it.
That's not due diligence. The guy said no. He said no, you're more than willing to deliver. Due diligence would have been to say, these are false electors. That's a crime. I'm not handing off this piece of criminality. Right, that would have been a different form of due diligence.
But like actual due diligence.
Well, Matt Smith did get on to a couple of the issues that may affect Rojo in his race. Cut number seven, should there be a federal ban on abortion? How'd Rojo answer? Cut seven.
It should be decided by we the people in each individual state. And I've said repeatedly that the decision that has to be made on a state-by-state basis is at what point does society have the responsibility to protect life? And again, I have my views, but I didn't want nine Supreme Court justices to decide that for everybody. I really don't want 535 members of Congress to decide that for the nation. I really want the people, through their elected representatives in the state, to decide that on a state-by-state basis.
Why can't they decide it on an individual-by-individual basis?
Right, exactly. That's the best way to do it. If you don't like abortions, don't have one.
Cut number eight. Do you support codifying the protections for gay marriage, Rojo? Play it.
I mean, that bill is completely unnecessary. The decision on gay marriage will never be overturned. It's completely different than Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision. Now, this is where stare decisis would be decisive. I do not see the Supreme Court overturning that, because that would impact, you know, millions of people that have been, you know, acted on that. Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision was proactive. It was protecting life in the future. So again, this is just Democrats, you know, opening up a wound that had really healed. You know, I've always been supportive of civil unions, but the Supreme Court, you know, ruled on gay marriage, and it's okay, that's the decision, let's move on.
That was 2014? That was 8 years ago. Roe was 50 years ago, and that was overturned. Just remind the people of that.
Let's move on. You stop asking me questions now.
A little bit more. Rojo, what's Trump's impact in Wisconsin? And do you love the man? You love the man, don't you, Rojo? Cut number nine.
First of all, my election is about, you know, me running as a U.S. Senator, dealing with the issues that are impacting Wisconsin.
Can you remove Trump from that?
I don't personally think Trump should have any impact whatsoever on this election in November 2022. Now, what he does in the future, that's something, a decision he's going to make. Now, I understand why people want to always keep bringing him in, but again, this is about Wisconsinites, about how they are suffering under Democrat governance, Democrat policies, you know, the higher inflation, the record gas prices, the open borders. I mean, I can keep doing that litany. That's what this election's about.
Yeah, you keep doing the litany, okay. So anyways, he's running away from Donald Trump. Sort of a new tack from U.S. Senator Ron Johnson from the state of Wisconsin. You know, he was a big Trump embracive guy, and then some new Marquette University Law School polling dropped. He's trailing Mandela by about seven. Mandela Barnes, the Democrats' choice for the U.S. Senate. And then also the Foxy News. Well, hell, he's even trailing in that one by about four. And when you look at the unfavorable for Rojo, I mean, he's drowning, man. He is way underwater. Marianas Trench kind of underwater.
Hey, he only supported Trump and the coup for just a couple of seconds. So it's all good. It's a referendum on the Democrats, not on 12 years of Rojo.
I think Rojo is about as popular as the anchovies on the pizza. You know, that one guy throws them on the last second. Nobody likes it. That's Rojo. You're the anchovies. Come back, John Nichols. He's the pepperonis on this pizza. More of the Big Monday edition. Our good friend John Nichols from the Cap Times, from the Nation. Your phone calls, they could also play a part. 844-967-2789.
I love you.
I don't know, but I'm suspicious.
Percent of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We welcome back a fine guest live via phone. He is John Nichols from the Nation, from the Cap Times, friend of ours. John, welcome back, man.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How did I merit the Hawaii 5-0 theme?
I'm not exactly sure, Dano, but we'll keep it rolling.
And it's a kick-in version. I think it's a cover. I'm not sure. But it sounded like a little bit edgier, which is always good.
Well, we like edgy around here. John Nichols, let me ask you, is it edgy to participate in a coup d'etat, but only for a few seconds?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess first and foremost, in Ron Johnson's defense, yeah, I guess it's better to do it only for a few seconds than for, like, you know, months. So you might say that, but it doesn't change the fact that Ron Johnson, in an interview apparently, you know, outside a cream puff booth at a fair, admitted that he was actively involved in seditious conspiracy, i.e. to deliver lists of fake electors from Wisconsin and Michigan to the vice president of the United States on the day that the president of the United States at that time wanted Pence to engage in an effort to replace the legitimate electors with the illegitimate electors. So we kind of have a situation now where Ron Johnson has placed himself at center conspiracy. And yet he says, but I don't need to testify before the January 6th committee because I don't know anything about it except that I was involved with it for a few seconds and sent some texts and made some calls. And can I just do one final element here, too? Who knew that Ron Johnson was a super fast texter?
Well, I know, man. Just waiting for that three dots just for a response. Like, hey, I got these fraudulent Trump electors I'd like to deliver to the vice president. And then they've got to think about it. And then you see the three dots for a while. I mean, it's more than seconds. It's minutes at minimum.
Yeah. John, what about the excuse that he's providing? Number one, the time frame, which of course is absolutely irrelevant, be it for a few hours, a few months, or a few seconds. But also, he did not know what the contents of the box was. Right? This is what he's telling you. It's like you're trying to get through the airport with some drugs in your baggage. Oh, I didn't know that was in there. I mean, that's essentially what he's saying. He didn't know that's what it was. Do you buy it, John?
Well, here's where the problem comes in. Okay. So, Ron Johnson says the office is contacted about this, right? And he has his aide contact the vice president. So Johnson himself has his aide contact the vice president's office to say they've got a package they want to give. They got something they want to give to the vice president. Vice president's aide then comes back and says, what is it? And they say, alternate lists of electors from Wisconsin and Michigan. That we know to be the fact. Well, how did the aide know that if, you know, Ron Johnson's the one telling him to do it, right? I mean, one presumes that at that point, Ron Johnson knew that they were talking about lists of what we would call fake electors. I mean, I don't see how else it works in that scenario. And so one fears that Ron Johnson has not thought his lie through as thoroughly as he should have. But then there's another, one more element on all this as well. Once the communications are going in all this, right, and it's actually coming out in this detailed way, it brings up a whole bunch of other questions. Who was it that contacted Ron Johnson and or his office about this? Who said they wanted to deliver these materials? Was it perhaps a Wisconsinite? Was it somebody Ron Johnson knew? Is it a lawyer who's involved in this? I mean, all of this stuff becomes incredibly significant to figuring out whether Donald Trump was personally aware of and engaged with this effort to deliver the names of the fake electors. So by any measure, Ron Johnson knows things that are relevant to the January 6th investigation, and yet he is saying he doesn't want to testify because he knows nothing. It doesn't add up.
Well, he was also sort of a prime witness to the quid pro quo under the first impeachment. He, you know, still voted to acquit the man. But John Nichols, yeah. Our fine guest.
Yeah.
John, what about the traditional issues not involving, you know, Ron Johnson's sort of underlying insurrectionist nature? I mean, you just look at the straight polling. Ron ain't doing so well. The people of Wisconsin seemingly are starting to see through the clown show here, Ron. John, sorry.
Don't confuse us, my friend.
Yes, my bad.
Anyways, look, here's the deal. Ron Johnson got by in his first two election cycles, which were good years for Republicans, by being a blank slate, right? In his first campaign, nobody knew who he was. He was just a guy with an R after his name. In his second cycle, people knew very little more about him. Remember, polling in 2016 showed that the overwhelming majority of Wisconsinites knew absolutely nothing about Ron Johnson. And he was able, in both those campaigns, to make himself into a blank slate where, you know, he had enough advertising, enough communication that things came together for him. He spent a lot of money, and his supporters spent a lot of money. This cycle's different. People do know who Ron Johnson is, and they know, you know, he's been involved in these conspiracy theories. He's been involved with, you know, kind of crazy theories about how to, vaccinate or not vaccinate yourself and how to deal with COVID, you know, with all sorts of patent medicines and stuff like that. So he's got quite a reputation here. And now, you know, as voters start to ponder that, he's trailing. In fact, Mandela Barnes has moved to a majority position, 51%, for the first time in, you know, this campaign. He's in a very, very good position. Strong numbers among Democrats and also independents. And one thing that I've been noting, I'm sure you guys, being the election geeks that you are, might have noted this as well. 16% of Republican primary voters didn't vote for Ron Johnson.
Yeah, they voted for Schroeder. We didn't even know he had a primary opponent.
Didn't know how to pronounce his name. But the guy got 110,000 votes. You know, and more power to him. I'm sure he's more competent than Ron Johnson. But the bottom line is that Mr. Schroeder, as best we can tell, had one interview, you know, one major media interview during the campaign, which was a Wisconsin Eye interview, and better than Ron Johnson. But I'm not sure how many people actually saw it. And then on top of that, as best I can tell, because I was interested in this guy getting 110,000 votes, which, by the way, was more than several of the candidates, supposedly legitimate Republican candidates for lieutenant governor, more than Tim Rampin got in the race for governor. And I thought, you know, this guy must have spent some money. But as best we can tell, he spent so little money he didn't have to file a campaign finance report against Ron Johnson, who spent $15 million. I think Ron Johnson might even have a little bit of problem in his own party.
No, I think he absolutely does, John. And let's not forget, once upon a time, and you talked about the prior elective cycles. Well, in 2018, when Scott Walker was on the ballot and Tammy Baldwin was on the ballot, Tammy Baldwin got 100,000 more votes as a U.S. senatorial candidate than Evers did when he defeated Walker. So here's my question, John. Theoretically, Mandela is a much stronger candidate against a much more vulnerable Republican in the current sense. Could we see some ticket splitting in this race?
You know, it's possible, but I have to be truthful with you. I don't think Wisconsin is as much of a ticket splitting state as it historically was. I think that's been, you know, dwindling to some extent. Tammy Baldwin was an incredibly strong candidate who had literally, you know, been to every corner of the state and done some tremendous work in her first term as a senator. So 18 being a good year for Democrats, a lot of things fell her way from her own work and also from the nature of the national mood at the time. So I'm not sure that Mandela Barnes is going to have, you know, that big a boost. What I will tell you is this. There is simply no question. Mandela Barnes can win this race. His numbers are good at this point. His primary numbers against, admittedly, most of his opponents dropped out. But remember, Mandela Barnes is a guy whose opponents had spent $25 million in the race against him, roughly $25 million. And many of them dropped out, or all the ones that dropped out after early voting had begun. And also, he still had several active opponents who were spending a reasonable amount of money and campaigning. And the guy got, you know, close to 80% of the vote in the primary. That's relatively equivalent to what Ron Johnson got on his side. And I just think Mandela Barnes is, you know, looking to be a very, very strong candidate. And these poll numbers reflect that. It doesn't mean that it should be taken for granted, however, because the fact is, the Republicans are never going to give up on this race, on this Senate race. They can't afford, there's no way that they can afford to lose Ron Johnson's seat, right, and have a hope of taking control of the Senate. So, you know, right up till, you know, November, there's going to be a huge amount of negative advertising attacking Mandela Barnes, undoubtedly more than you saw in the 2018 cycle attacking Tammy Baldwin. And so it's going to be an ugly, difficult, and complex race. But at the end of the day, by any measure I can see, I just think that Mandela Barnes can and very probably will win.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show. John Nichols, our friend, associate editor of the Cap Times, and of course with The Nation as well. John, it was the Cap Times article that caught my attention. Wanted to get your take on that. Liz Cheney got her ass handed to her in her election the other day, and she, you know, kind of compared herself to Lincoln. John, I think you took a little bit of umbrage with that. If you would, in the next few minutes, kindly, sir, tell us why Lincoln is spinning in his grave right now.
Well, let's first and foremost give Liz Cheney her due. On the January 6th committee, she's been an outstanding member, and her challenges to Trump and to people around Trump have been terrific. And give her credit for that. Give her credit for voting to impeach Donald Trump when everyone knew that he should be impeached. So high marks in all those areas. But I just want to caution about Liz Cheney's very, very substantial ego, which I would argue is every bit as substantial as Donald Trump's, and the fact that Liz Cheney would like very much to be in charge of the Republican Party. She's mad that Trump's in charge, and I understand that. I think it's totally appropriate. I don't have a problem with that. But it is important to recognize that if she came back to being in charge, and she and, you know, the Cheney family, the Bush family, the old school folks came back to being in charge, it's not like you're putting some moderate, enlightened Republican in a position of authority there. Liz Cheney is somebody who has dealt in racist and xenophobic tropes. She's vicious in her attacks on people. She, as a so-called establishment Republican, was at least sympathetic to Donald Trump's birther lies about Barack Obama. She claimed that Kamala Harris sounds like Karl Marx, which I can assure you she doesn't. And, you know, again and again and again, if you look at Liz Cheney's record, 93% voting with Donald Trump, endorsed Donald Trump in 2016 and 2020, raised money for Donald Trump when he was running for president. You know, I just don't see her as, you know, the embodiment of Abraham Lincoln in these times.
Would you see Dominic as the embodiment of Abraham Lincoln in these times, John?
Well, okay, so we're going to have a little competition there between Dominic and Abe Lincoln, or between Dominic and Liz Cheney. I will tell you that Dominic, whose constant progress toward enlightenment is a thing of wonder, is I would definitely vote for him over Liz Cheney. Yes.
John Nichols, hold that thought. Dom hates the theater as well. Or Devil's Advocate, or John Nichols.
Occupy didn't start on Wall Street. It started on our street, the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Be sure to check us out on the social medias on Twitter at Devil Radio, on Facebook at the Devil's Advocates Radio, of course, on the phones at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, we got a fine caller right now. He is John Nichols, our good friend from the nation, from the Cap Times locally. John, thanks for sticking around. Man, wanted to talk to you about the gubernatorial race. Tim Michaels apparently won the nomination and then ran back home to Connecticut, or maybe he had COVID. He was MIA for like a week, John, but now he's back in the race. Do you think he can etch a sketch a la Romney, or do you think this man's married to Donald Trump all the way to the general?
Well, he tried to etch a sketch, didn't he? I mean, it was revealed by this New York Times reporter who, you know, was doing yeoman's work and went to probably, you know, grab some quote off Tim Michaels's website. And noticed that Michaels had, scraped off all reference to Donald Trump right after the primary. So Michaels is like, well, thanks, Donald. Now that I'm the nominee, I don't know you. And when that was revealed, of course, understanding Donald Trump's ego and Donald Trump's tendency to dislike it when you distance yourself from him, reference Liz Cheney, Michaels scrambled back and said, oh, I fully embrace Donald Trump's endorsement, thrilled to have it. We put all the Trump references back on the website. So I think that Tim Michaels knows full well that being associated with Donald Trump in a November election in Wisconsin is not necessarily the most useful thing, but he can't really get out of it now. So no, he is not going to go full Romney. He's not going to become the Liz Cheney of Wisconsin. He is Donald Trump's man. There's simply no question of that. And, I will say, I think a lot of people are being pretty rough on him and, pointing out his foibles and flaws. But I will say this in defense of Tim Michaels. He was gone for a week or so, or quite a while after he won the nomination. But do you have any idea how tough it is to do air travel these days? I mean, getting from Connecticut to Wisconsin is not easy.
One more, then I'll let Dom take a crack at you, John. Michaels is definitely a Trump guy, and here's how I know it, John Nichols. He's out there complaining about the rigged polls. He says his gut tells him he's really up 5-10 on Tony Evers because, Republican people, when they get called by the pollsters, they lied to the pollsters. Johnny might have a point about that, but is it feasible that Michaels is actually beating Tony Evers, what the polling says?
Well, let's work with this, okay? First and foremost, we got a newly minted Republican nominee for governor who says my supporters are a bunch of liars, which is, it's an interesting way to introduce your backers. But beyond that, they're a very intriguing bunch of liars because apparently to perpetuate the lie, a huge number of them said that they were supporting Mandela Barnes. Because if Michaels is ahead by 5 or 10 points and Mandela Barnes is ahead by 7 points and in a majority position, that means that there's a lot of Republicans who are saying they're supporting Mandela Barnes. And I kind of don't buy that. What I do think happened is that Tim Michaels actually did better in that poll than he is currently positioned at. And I'll tell you why. That poll was conducted right after a primary in which Tim Michaels had spent, I think it was about $12 million on name recognition and wall-to-wall advertising, direct mailings, and et cetera. So Tim Michaels was at about his strongest possible position when that poll was conducted. And my sense is that now that there's a lot more, he's not up on air as much, and Evers and others are up with ads criticizing him, especially on the issue of choice, but a host of other issues. I don't think he'd poll as well this week as he did last week. So, again, he may be using some formula that they apply in Connecticut for polling, but I don't think he's reading the Wisconsin polls. I don't think he's got some sort of secret theory for how the Wisconsin polls are actually showing him to be a winner. I think he is behind, and he's probably more behind than even the Marquette poll suggested.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. John Nichols from The Nation, also from the Cap Times. John, three more minutes left here. Lindsey Graham, famously said, if we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed and we will deserve it. Fast forward to the last Trump rally Crudy drugged me to when Michaels was introduced by Trump. And he said something very interesting to me, was that the Republican Party, in their mind, was reborn although it was started here in Wisconsin, was reborn in New York at Trump Tower. And to me, John, that means they've murdered the original, whatever was the GOP, and now that's something different. Number one, do you think that the party, nationally and locally here in the state of Wisconsin, the GOP is in disarray? And two, do you think they can recover from what Trump has done to that party?
Two very good questions. First, are they just in disarray? Not necessarily. I think if we're honest with ourselves, we have to recognize that Wisconsin, as an example, is a very closely divided state, and that Trump has turned the Republican Party into a Trump party. I mean, it is a reflection of him. But remember, he got almost half the vote in 2020 in Wisconsin. And so, I wouldn't run around imagining that the Republican Party is total chaos, apologizing, motorcycles all around here. But I wouldn't imagine that the Republican Party is in total chaos. I think they're ready for this November election, and I think they'll mount a serious campaign. That other side of your question is a really intriguing one. Does this Republican Party have anything whatsoever to do with the Republican Party that was founded in Wisconsin at Ripon in 1854? And the answer is absolutely nothing. That Republican Party founded in 1854 was in favor of land reform to, deal with poverty. It supported, efforts to, stop the spread of slavery. It was welcoming immigrants. And frankly, a lot of the people that were involved in it were, in that initial founding, were members of a socialist commune. So no, the current Republican Party has nothing to do with the Republican Party of 1854. It also has nothing to do with the Republican Party of 1954 when Dwight Eisenhower was president. And frankly, I don't think it has much to do with the Republican Party of even 2000 or 1984 when Ronald Reagan was president. Reagan was a conservative, but he wasn't this kind of conservative. So they have become a very different party. They are a cult of Donald Trump.
And it's not Scott Walker or Rebecca Clayfish's Republican Party, John. Less than a minute.
Obviously not, because the voters had a chance to, re-up the Scott Walker concession, and they didn't. In fact, they rejected it. Now, I happen to believe that was the dumbest thing Rebecca Clayfish did. The idea of putting Scott Walker on your TV ad in Wisconsin, basically it was just like screaming, hey, take a look down at Racine County. How is that investment from that Taiwanese company going? So I don't think associating with Walker was the smartest move to be.
Thank you, John Nichols. Fox Connor bust, baby. Didn't work as a campaign for Rebecca or Walker. More Devil's Advocates. Hour 2 is next.
Thanks, John.